The department is constructing several demonstration systems under the auspices of the broader DHS data framework. Their overall goal is to gather together huge sums of data from more than a dozen different IT silos scattered across the various DHS components, many of them built decades ago, translate their content into a common, modern data format, and make them centrally searchable by Homeland Security staff who have a legitimate need to access that information, and only staff who have a need to access the information. Rebecca Richards is DHS's Senior Director for Privacy Compliance.
We collect a lot of data under a lot of different authorities for a lot of different purposes. And there are a lot of legal privacy policy issues that come with that. But there is also good use for that data. And so when we're looking at, we have an individual in front of us, if, for example, we're concerned that they may actually be someone who's on a terrorist watch list, today, we have to go through and look at 17 different IT systems, which means it's 17 different logins. Sometimes you're on different domains, so sometimes you're on the unclassified, sometimes you're on the classified. This is just physically difficult. Nothing else to say. Like, you have the authority to do these activities, but you're having to go through this very difficult sort of process.
The department has been testing out the program, which is actually made up of three separate new IT systems, for at least the last several months. And while it's a long way from being ready for day-to-day mission use, officials say their pilots prove the basic concept works, not only technically, but from the perspective of being able to maintain privacy safeguards as well. The department says vastly widening the data sets that DHS analysts and enforcement officers have easy access to is great from a mission perspective, but absent new safeguards, it also presents a huge potential for abuse, either making privacy violations much easier or enabling the next would-be Edward Snowden to walk off with a vast trove of data.
And what we wanted to do was build on this concept of how can we look at the data and give access to the data that people should have it, but control it in a way so that you're not creating a honeypot for everyone to want to come and look at, and make sure that you're only using it for the purposes for which you said you were allowed to.
To make that possible, DHS is first building a user attribute hub that will serve as the foundation for role-based access control in the framework. It'll manage various characteristics of every user in the department, such as their security clearance level, their job function, and their training level. Then, in the aggregated data environment, each piece of data will be tagged with identifiers that control which users can access it and for what purpose. And when users do get to access the data for any reason, that activity will be stored in audit logs that DHS says won't be able to be changed or destroyed, even by systems administrators. The first piece of the project is called Neptune. Its sole job is to scoop information from those 17 IT systems across DHS on a regular basis and translate it into a common format, adding data tags along the way to dictate who can and who can't access it. And besides providing a proof of concept for the information sharing project, Richard says that pilot has produced some other knock-on benefits, like pinpointing serious data quality issues in the DHS component's legacy systems.
It turns out that there were four or five different ways to identify you were from Germany. And it was across, sometimes it was within the same data set, and sometimes it was all the way, you know, it was across the different three different data sets. Well, this is useful and will help bring back down to these source systems to help them improve their data quality, which has always been a concern.
From there, the data makes its way to two other systems. One, called Cerberus, will operate in the classified domain, but it will contain a mix of classified and unclassified data, so that authorized users operating for a specific purpose can search everything from intelligence data to TSA passenger lists and visa applications all at once.
The idea was, we're going to take the data that we've tagged on Neptune and put it in the classified environment. Just because it's in the classified environment does not make it classified. You still have unclassified data, but now you are able to do a classified search or compare that classified information against our unclassified data. I want to repeat, just because data is on the high side, it is not classified. So that has a different set of privacy concerns. One of the ones that I've worried about the most is I'm replicating data across the department. When I ask for my Privacy Act request, I need to know that the FOIA officer needs to not only search at the unclassified level, they're going to have to be able to search on the classified level, because just because it's in a different place doesn't mean that I shouldn't have access to it.
A third system, a prototype called the Common Entity Index, is designed to serve as a double check on the controls DHS has already designed. CEI's job is to aggregate data from DHS legacy systems and test whether the fundamental principles behind the access control scheme is working. If a user doesn't have the legal authority to see data about a person in today's legacy systems, he or she shouldn't be able to access it in the new framework either. Richard says a lot of privacy and technical questions still need to be asked and answered before the system goes into use. But fundamentally, she says she thinks DHS has avoided many of the fundamental concerns that tend to accompany data mining projects by involving its privacy and civil liberties officials early and at major steps in the framework's design.
You know, it's difficult to underscore, but in a department this large, to have had the two successful pilots go forward with different data sets from three different components is fantastic. It's the first time it's happened, and a way that has included the oversight organizations in building us all the way into the process. And so, you know, this is where we are in the process. We've gotten two pilots off the ground that showed that they could do access control. That was very exciting for oversight, and I think very boring for our mission operators, but, you know, we're working with them together.
DHS's privacy office has asked its outside advisory panel of data and privacy experts to provide questions and input on potential concerns going forward. Richards herself will not be at the department to hear those requests, though. Friday was her last day at DHS before she moves to the National Security Agency to serve as its first ever civil liberties and privacy officer. In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.